If I had a lot of money, and so could get my auric machine going, dentists would be able to see much more clearly what is wrong with teeth, and how to get them out painlessly. What I had visualized was a thing like an instant photography camera which would take a photograph of the aura of a person so that anyone could see the colors. It is the colors of the aura which are important, you know. The brightness of the colors and their particular striations. If one looks at an aura, and one sees the color of a disease, then, given suitable apparatus, it would be quite possible to cure the disease before it really got a hold. One would cure it by applying the necessary contra colors which would change the degraded color of the illness, and so, by sympathetic reaction, the person would be cured from the aura to the physical body. This is not a wild pipe dream. It is a thing which really works. It is a thing which doctors should investigate. Unfortunately, medical treatment is 100 years or so behind the times, and if doctors would only get down to business and investigate new ideas instead of saying, that is impossible, Aristotle did not teach it, then, no doubt people would not suffer pain so much. For those who desire to experiment with the aura, and who have some money, let them try buying one of those reasonably cheap television cameras, and connect it to a television set. The camera should be set to receive and transmit much higher frequencies, that is, a higher part of the spectrum, than is usual for pictures. And if the adjustment is carried out correctly, the onlookers can see a fuzzy reproduction of a human body with various gray streaks and lines and swirls around the body. If people want to experiment with a camera, and they have some knowledge of chemistry, it is possible to make sensitive material which can record a much higher frequency than that normally used in orthodox photographic work. This also works because I have taken pictures of the human aura, and I have destroyed such pictures because it gets utterly monotonous when some scientist says that such things cannot be, therefore the pictures must be fakes. A scientist, that should be in quotes, will say this even when a picture has been produced in front of him. He still thinks there is some trick somewhere, and it does appear to me that the world is not yet ready for auric photography. It needs to have the scientific geniuses educated for a few years more. Sight, and sound, and touch are very interesting subjects, you know. They are all part of the same spectrum of vibration. Do you ever stop to think when touch becomes sight or sound? If you are touching a thing, you get a very crude vibration which impresses that part of your body with which it is in contact that here is a subject of some particular composition, that is, density. You can also see such a thing. But then, do you realize that you cannot see a sound wave, nor can you hear the thing which you see? If we go from our touch point of view upwards on the scale of the spectrum, we hear a sound. That sound may be of a low note, that is almost on the touch scale, or it may be a high note which is almost into the sight scale. When your ears fail to respond to certain vibrations because they have gone too high, then your sight takes over. You may, for example, see a dull red. But, just think about sight in your next meditation. When you see a thing, you do not touch that thing. It may be in a glass bottle, it may be billions of miles away in space. But yet the thing which you see is touching you, or you would not be able to perceive it. You can only see an article when that article is vibrating so much that it is continually throwing off particles of itself and generating vibrations which cross space and everything else to reach you. But these vibrations are so frail, so weak, that even a sheet of black paper can cut them out, while the coarse vibrations of sound can penetrate even a stone wall. One could say that this life and the astral life are represented in this manner. The coarse vibrations of sound would represent life on earth, but the finer and higher vibrations of sight would represent the astral. There are many senses available to us in the astral which we do not even know about when in the physical. People write to me and they ask, how is it possible for a fourth dimensional person to, well, as an illustration, drop a stone into one's living room? I think the person who wrote had just read an account in a newspaper about a haunted house wherein stones were thrown into locked rooms. The answer to that is that in the third dimensional world of the flesh we are only able to perceive in the dimensions of the flesh, and if there was an opening somewhere else, the flesh body's eyes would not be able to perceive it. Let us assume that humans can only look down, or they are two-dimensional. So, as they can only look down, they cannot see the ceiling above. But if a person outside the room can perceive that there is no ceiling there, then that person can easily toss a brick into the person who cannot look up. That is rather a crude way of explaining it, but what really happens is that every room, or everything on earth, has another opening, another aperture, which humans on earth cannot perceive because they lack the necessary organ with which to perceive that dimension. Yet a person who is in a fourth dimensional world can make use of that opening and pass things through it into what, to the third dimensional inhabitant, is a closed space. This type of joke is often played by lower entities who like to pose as poltergeists. We must not forget the lady who wrote in and asked me if I could explain in simple terms the nature of telepathy. She had read my other books, but apparently this subject of telepathy had her completely baffled. Let's see what we can do, shall we? Even scientists now agree that the brain generates electricity. There are medical procedures in which brain waves are charted. A special apparatus is placed on the head, and four squiggly lines indicate four different levels of thought. For some strange reason, these four squiggly lines are given Greek names, which doesn't concern us at all. But the brain generates electricity, and the electricity varies according to what one is thinking in much the same way as if when one is speaking into a microphone, the words generate a current which continuously varies in intensity according to what is being said. In a tape recorder, for example, one speaks and one speech impresses minute magnetic currents on a specially prepared tape. Afterwards, when the tape is played back, one obtains a reproduction of the original speech. The human brain generates an electric current which other brains can pick up, in much the same way as the tape on a tape recorder picks up the minute impulses from voice vibrations which are transferred to electric impulses. When you think, you broadcast your thoughts. Most people are immune to the noise of the thoughts of other people, and fortunately so, because everyone is thinking something all the time. And unless people were immune to that continuous, non-stop, never-ending noise, one would go quite round the bend. By special training, or by a fluke of nature, one can tune in to thoughts, because, as our brains generate electricity, so they are able to receive electric impressions. It is a form of telepathy which keeps the body in touch with the overself, the telepathy in this instance being a very special ultra-high frequency current going from the brain of the flesh body, by way of the silver cord, and onto the overself. But, to reply in the simplest possible terms to the question, how does telepathy work? It is necessary only to say that every brain acts as a radio transmitter and radio receiver, and if you knew how to switch on your receiver you would be inundated with everybody else's thoughts. You can pick up the thoughts of those with whom you are compatible far more easily than you can pick up the thoughts of those with whom you are not compatible. And a good exercise is to guess what a person whom you know well is going to say next. If you guess for some time, you will soon discover that your successes are far outstripping the laws of chance, and when you begin to realize that you are well on the way to telepathic communication with the person with whom you are compatible. Here again, it is a matter which needs practice and patience, and when you are telepathic you will wish you were not, because life will be a constant babble, what with humans and animals all the time talking to each other. Chapter 9. Outside the window the noise and the clamor were continuous. High-speed pneumatic hammers were drilling holes many feet into the old rock, a rock which used to be the site of many fine old houses. In years gone by the wives of sea captains lived here, and kept their nightly vigil of the sea, waiting for their men to return home, home to the haven of the harbor with the ever-burning light beckoning from the house windows. One fine old house, towering above the others, had stood proud for years, and in its declining days the ghost of the old lady who had watched, and watched in vain, for the return of her beloved husband, had become well known. Nightly she stood at the port side window, with her hands holding aside the drapes so that she could see them more clearly. Night after night, in ghostly outline, she stood there, peering, peering, seeking the man who never came back to her, the man whose body lay beneath the surface of the ocean a thousand miles from home. Now the house was down, demolished. The whole street of houses was down, and the voracious drills and hammers were biting at the living rock, tearing it up in great chunks to make way for the progress of civilization. Here would be a great road, an artery of the community. A road spanning the city, spanning, too, the river, linking one side to the other by a new bridge. The clamor was continuous. Immense bulldozers shoved vast piles of rock and earth, steam shovels gouged into the soil, trucks rattled and roared at all hours of the day and night. There was the shouting of men, and the barking of dogs, and peace had fled long ago. The old man bent over the letters from readers, and set aside the last one. Mrs. Old Man looked up, perhaps with a sigh of relief to see that work was coming to an end. Then she rose to feed the little girl cats who had come bustling in to say that it was their tea time, and could they have their food in a hurry, please, because they had thought a lot and were very hungry. So Mrs. Old Man went off with a cat on each side. The old man turned to Buttercup, Buttercup who, in Spanish, was misnamed Amapola. Buttercup, said the old man, it doesn't matter that there has been a mail strike, we've done some good work in answering all these queries, haven't we? Buttercup looked pleased to think that work was coming to an end for another day. You only started this 14 days ago, she said, and now the book is finished in record time. Yes, replied the old man, but you've typed 7,000 words a day, haven't you? And now we've come to an end. Buttercup smiled with pleasure at the thought. Well, in that case I will just type the end, replied Buttercup. Kindness to Publishers Department. Throughout the years since the third I first appeared, I have had a tremendous amount of my one, and up to the present I have always answered that mail. Now I have to say that I am no longer able to reply to any mail at all unless adequate return postage is enclosed. So please do not send letters to my publisher for forwarding to me, because I have asked my publisher not to forward any letters. People forget that they pay for a book, and not a lifetime of free post-paid advisory service. Publishers are publishers, not a letter forwarding service. I have letters from all over the world, even from well behind the Iron Curtain, but not one in several thousand people encloses return postage, and the cost is so much that I can no longer undertake replies. People ask such peculiar things, too. Here are just some. There was a very desperate letter from Australia which reached me when I was in Ireland. The matter was, apparently, truly urgent, so at my own expense I sent a cable to Australia, and I did not even receive a note of thanks. A certain gentleman in the USA wrote me a letter demanding that I should immediately write a thesis for him and send it by return airmail. He wanted to use it as his thesis to obtain a doctorate in Oriental philosophy. Of course he did not enclose any postage, it was merely a somewhat threatening demand.